Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How are things in your world?
I am doing pretty well, and I was so excited to tap into the computer yesterday and listen to the Trade Show channel because our producer here at the Glen Lake studio was also out doing some field work at the remote broadcast at Alley Awards last night.
That's right. Meeting professional celebration. It felt like the Oscars.
It was like the Oscars.
It seemed like you guys were on a red carpet. You were so many award winners.
Oh, yeah. We had about 32 award winners. So
busy night for him.
32 interviews? Did you do that many interviews last night?
Actually, luckily for me, that I did do 32 interviews, mm-hmm. but the award interviews, we had a bunch of people win like 4 or 5 awards.
Oh, nice.
So you can knock those out.
Exactly.
But you had some help in Jessica Park, right?
Yeah, she did a great job with Jay Park and Events, and she was a great, lovely co-host. She had like one of the best outfits. It was a lot of fun. You can't beat an open bar either.
So Jessica's not with us here this morning, so we'll have to just make it through this with you and I, Lee.
Yeah, I know. The guests are slumming with us. But we have a big night tonight.
We do. We're going to help them kick off Big Data Week. We're going to be out at the Georgia Tech Research Institute.
Yeah? Right, at the conference center there.
Man, we're busy.
I know. The fun never ends.
It's getting to be like work, isn't it?
It's morning till night.
But it's not working. It really does beat the heck out of working. And this morning's going to be no exception. On High Velocity Radio this morning, a little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Mark Gorlin with Cabbage Inc. and Steve Broomer with 151 Advisors. But first up on High Velocity Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce from Thai Atlanta, Mr. Palaswami Rajan, affectionately referred to here in the studio as Raj. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Stone.
Well, we are delighted to have you. I tell you what, to get us started, how about giving us a quick overview, if you would, just mission and purpose of Thai Atlanta?
So Thai Atlanta is part of the global Thai ecosystem, and it consists of about 61 chapters in 17 countries. And Thai was started in 92 in Silicon Valley with the primary mission of mentoring entrepreneurs and stoking the virtuous creation of wealth in the community, right? It started out from an Indian-centric ethnic focused reason, because glass ceiling, all the good stuff, that was a model that was used. Over the years, Thai grew from Silicon Valley to 61 chapters, different countries, different ethnicities, and in about 5 years ago, it was always open to anyone who was interested in being part of Thai, but now it's just mainstream. It's so Thai. It used to be called the Indus Entrepreneurs, now it's just Thai, T-I-E. Like IBM, we follow their model in there. So Thai's mission was started with the goal that entrepreneurship is inherently very risky, and there's no way to teach it. It's through an apprenticeship model. So you have a two-tier structure in Thai to work on the mission. And we essentially have successful entrepreneurs, executives, who are very, very key. We are looking for our people who are altruistic, willing and able to give back, are invited to be charter members who primarily act as the mentors. And then the general membership is open to anyone interested in entrepreneurship. And there's different structured programs, one-on-one mentoring, if need be. We have different courses from high school students to people who have bootstrapped a company to a decent, profitable size and a decent size, but don't know how to scale it further. So it's really about, a great group of altruistic people with good intentions of growing the community, growing the skill set. And essentially the analogy to use is, you want to play a game, you go out to the field and you want to play with the best people. That's how you learn, and that's what we do.
Now, how do the mentors interact with the members? Like, say you have an entrepreneur, and you said they can be as young as high school age.
Yeah.
So is it at a meeting, or is there a matchmaking where you kind of pair up the right mentor with the right entrepreneur? How does that work logistically?
So we have, our program is broken, so it's very structured, so we can measure it, right? Last year we mentored 56 companies, mm-hmm. about 100 individuals, 115 individuals, and we had about 67 mentors active. So we our goal is to create about 100 million in new wealth by 2017, and then create a rolling cycle on it.
And that's just for the Atlanta chapter, or
just the Atlanta chapter?
Wow.
I mean, if you look at the past 15 years, there's been, you know, probably about 20 billion of wealth creation from companies started by Thai members and exited over the years, right? All over the country, all over the world, actually. But in Atlanta, we put this structured programming. So we have five pillars, but that are supported by, you know, how do you mentor? You know, how do you foster entrepreneurship? It's education, mentoring, and networking, right? You got to know the right people and have the and also learn, right? So we have structured programs. We have monthly programs where we have our meetings where we have about 100, 150 people show up, and we have expert panels. Our mentor roundtables where we're talking about different topics.
And that's from an education standpoint?
That's from an education standpoint. It hits two goals, education and networking.
Uh-huh.
And the mentoring is really peer-to-peer at that point, right?
So say more about these five pillars, if you would, for a moment. How do you go about sharing this with new members, and maybe speak a little bit more to how you use that to guide your meetings?
So the five pillars are really structured programs. So we have they're structured for different age groups and different skill sets and different things. By the way, we don't, from when you talk about entrepreneurs, everyone thinks of entrepreneurs as a college dropout and he's going to come out.
Right.
The reality is most people that we see and that we tend to work with are professionals who have been in business 10, 15 years. I'm ready to get out and wanting to start something, and you see more people closer to the average age, I would say 40 to 45 versus the misconception that's out there, right? So when we designed this program, so we call them the horizontals of the monthly programming, the one-on-ones, the annual conference, they're all
right.
Awards, they're all, we call them horizontals, that broad-based kind of touch everyone, get in. Then we have structured programmings like a virtual incubator model, where we take a very structured educational model, like our TYE, Thai Young Entrepreneurs, focuses on high school students. And it's a year-long program. So essentially we take about 40 students max, and they're put through a full-blown so-called mini MBA. They take we do these classes on Sunday afternoons, and it's for first 4 months. It is about getting the background on the theory, and these are the mentors go out there, work with them, and they conduct the classes. There are expert entrepreneurs who have been there who actually go out and teach these classes, right? And they're very structured curriculum to get it. In the second half, these guys break into creating business plans, and they actually form teams, and they have to work on a business plan, and then they have mentors assigned to help them with creating this. And then they participate, like our TyCon on Saturday, this coming Saturday on the 27th, they will be doing the local competition. There's out of 40 people, there are about 5 or 6 teams get formed, and there'll be a local competition, and there's a small amount of prize money. And the winner from this competition then goes on to participate in the global competition, which is roughly about a $25,000 prize money, and they compete with other high school kids from other chapters in the world.
Wow, how exciting. Right? That's a great opportunity. So do they come into this program with an actual idea, or they can just be interested in becoming an entrepreneur, and then when they get into their team, then they form?
These kids are 14, 15 years old.
Right.
So they don't come in with any – some have ideas what they want to explore, but they don't come in with – they have an interest in it.
Right.
And this is the third year that we're doing it, third class that we're graduating, and the first two class – the parents and the kids themselves were so astounded with how it helped them transform and improve their skills. This year we had a phenomenal event happen, where typically we look for mentors from the charter members who come out and help. So we had the alumni from the last 2 years TYE class saying, "Man, we want to give back."
So the alumni, kids wanted to be the mentors to the kids.
So they volunteered their time on Saturday, Sundays to come and spend with these teams to help them and coach them.
I mean, how rewarding is that for you to come?
That is amazing.
That is amazing, right?
you talk about creating net givers and paying it forward, paying it back, right? I mean, these young kids just have sucked it up and leading. It's not lip service. These guys are going to go.
Right, they're investing their time and energy into making this. And that's great.
I mean, great feeling from all of us who participated. I mean, we have about 100 CMs and about 400 members, and I sent this out, and it just makes you feel that, you know, the small things that you do, you created a generation or at least impacted 100 kids who are going to go change the world.
Right.
Better, right?
That is outstanding. Steve Broomer over here has been raising his hand. He has a question or two that he wants to throw in here. What do you got, Steve?
Raj, how do these students get selected?
So they have an application form. It's an application process, and they're diverse. We hit all the schools, all the different resources. We partner with Jay where we can. We open it up. And we look for commitment to make sure that the biggest thing that we look for, in the first year we ran it, we had zero dropouts. Because problem with a lot of the programs is, over time, you know, half the class drops out. And for 2 years in a row, we had zero dropouts. Right? This year, we had one child didn't drop out, but their parents moved to a different city.
Right.
Right? So we take that process to select and make sure that the commitment is there from the parents and from the kid to be in there. I mean, it costs them nothing, right? We subsidize all of that. The beauty is, you know, our model, a tie that was set up was, if you're willing and able and you're a successful entrepreneur, you pay a very high dues, and those dues are subsidized. That's why you become a charter member, and you subsidize the membership, right? The point is, if you're an up-and-coming entrepreneur, you don't have much money, okay? So we figured that, you know, that's, you know, we joke that we are probably the only organization that makes you pay to give back. Right? and with your time as well, that, right? But it sets the goal and aligns everyone to be truly, have sincere intent in doing that, right? So I say it's, you know, that's our process that we have. And if you have any kids or anything, our next class will open up in, applications will open up in July, and the next year will start in September. We coincide with the school year.
And is it just for the Atlanta chapter, or is it? Are you doing this internationally as well?
So there are about 30 of the 61 chapters have a TYE program worldwide. So we compete with kids in India, Singapore. It's a worldwide competition.
Now, okay, so that's the kids, the high school age kids. Now, say you're that middle-aged person that is an executive maybe and displaced, and mm-hmm. now you're going to kind of throw your hat in the ring regarding being an entrepreneur. What does the mentoring look like from that? Because they're coming from, and a lot of corporate people, at least we run across, you know, that's a different kind of world when you're working for a big company and you go, hey, I worked with Coca-Cola, and then people return my phone call, and then you go, hey, I work for my own business, and then no one's returning my phone call, and then they can't understand that disconnect that's happened when they're the same person.
So we actually, you know, so there's, by the way, all these curriculum, we use Lean Startup and the best, the latest science aspect. You know, entrepreneurship has always been, I mean, we all learned the hard way.
Sure.
We went to but, HBS.
Right, but minimum viable product sounds good for an entrepreneur, and everybody in this room probably accepts that as a way to go forward. But if you're a big corporate executive, how comfortable are they with minimum viable product?
So just to get, that's what I'm getting to, right? So part of what we have done is we looked at all. So we all joke that we went to HBS, not Harvard, the right. Hard Knocks business.
Exactly.
Right. But over the years, all this learning from entrepreneurs who started young and have been putting out and distilling it, that's where you're seeing the Lean Startup and others. We have adopted a lot of that curriculum and put that into a virtual accelerator, incubator model. So now at TYE, we use the same thing, but it's spread out for a school year because it's a little longer for the kids. So for the exec or for someone who's been out to come up, we have a program called TYE Accelerator. And TYE Accelerator, TYE X for short. And what we do that is there are two phases to it. One is called ideation, right? So I'm an entrepreneur. I don't know how to come up with ideas or how to refine my ideas, right? Half of the time, you know, before you jump in, you need to know your idea is validated. So you apply a lot of the knowledge and the lean principles and the discovery and the other things to minimize your risk before you go in. And that's about a five-week course that's done on Mondays, 4 hours every Monday for 5 weeks. When all the mentors, again, come back and the different mentors assigned to teach the classes and the different topics and help them guide through that. So if you want to come up and you want to start a business, we recommend that you go in because most businesses are not well thought out. and you will
really
win.
You learn that not thought out.
Well, yeah, it's risk, and it's easy to say how I'm going to spend 10 grand or 20 grand, but if you're playing the game, it's important that you learn how to play the game
right.
So then we, once they get past that phase and they have a good idea and they face it, then they move into the second phase, which is, again, another 5-week program, and it's called TIEX Startup, right? And once they're past those two phases, and then we have TIEX Growth, which is essentially that they're, at that time they're fundable or they're on a different path to grow, and we formalize that with our advisory board that, of mentors that work very closely with them on moving it. And some of them might actually end up investing because some of our charter members are angel investors as well. And so they might end up investing, taking a board seat and doing different things.
So say more about this one-to-one mentoring. Is there some structure around that? Do they get together every week, every month? Are they each pair designs their own little program? Or?
So we essentially try to matchmake and see who the right mentor is. And we're actually rolling out a new product called Mentor Cloud in the next couple of weeks. So this is, we've been talking, and someone in the Valley, one of our tribe members in the Valley, figured out how to matchmake and create a mentoring pool and work with the Thai chapters as the first goal. So they've implemented Thai Silicon Valley, and Thai Atlanta will be next, right? So we're going to be rolling that out. We'll formalize and gather metrics. Right now what happens is we make the introductions, we do it, but sometimes the consistency. I mean, they are learning. I mean,
sure.
Clearly the mentoring is happening, but what happens is people get discouraged when they realize their ideas are not good. But
if that's been known to happen.
It is. And so we go back and tell them, just look at it and say, ideas are a dime a dozen, so you got to keep going, right? If you want to be an entrepreneur, it's not like, hey, I got this one idea today and
right, and I'm done. That's
exactly.
It.
Right?
Got to make it work or not.
So you got to go, and that's the time frame that we are trying to go back in. And over time, our goal is to move people forward, right, in as many ways. And a lot of that comes down to knowledge and experience. And again, the network is important because, say, you want to know if a business is viable or not, and you want to find your customers. Usually, they're in our base or within 1 degree of separation.
When you're, say, a person, an entrepreneur is chosen for this program, they're going through the program, and then you're matchmaking the mentor for them. Is the mentor going to come from the Atlanta chapter, or is it anybody that is really a match? Is that what the cloud match is supposed to do, the mentor match?
The mentor cloud, that's what we're trying to do, is to connect the global. So
broader than just the local chapter?
But unfortunately, mentoring is a local game, right?
Local
sport.
Is it in face-to-face, or is it over the phone?
Some can be done over the phone, but really bulk of that is, it's just face-to-face, right? I mean, you can chat on the phone, you can do it, but end of the day, the chemistry and the relationship gets built. If someone can call and ask for a transactional advice, right? You'll get an opinion, but everyone's got an opinion. But
right.
If you want to build a mentor relationship, the chemistry's got to be right.
So it's good for the mentor to kind of embed himself in the business a little bit and see what it's like?
And you got to get them excited. These are busy people that are operating their own business, but they're giving back. So you had to get their interest, and that's part of the skill, right? I mean, as an entrepreneur, if you can convince people who are willing to give back, who already said they want to give back, and you can get them to be an advisor, I would suggest that they should rethink their participation as an entrepreneur, right? I mean, so it's kind of like, so that's why I say it's a local game, because end of the day, you want to the goal, the mentors get excited when they are able to mentor people like themselves, like they're talking about the TYE alumni who came back to give back. Those kids can call any of the mentors. You know what? People, they have proven that they're givers. Mm. They'll get, even busy people will make time to spend time with them, right? So it becomes a natural filtering process of creating what I call the do-gooders and the altruistic. You're creating new role models of people with the right ingredient from scratch, right? They're with the right motivations and the right a view on life, on giving back that they're starting out with. That makes it very exciting for more people to give back, right? Mm-hmm. There's some people who just come for transactional advice, and that's what they get.
Right.
Right? They don't build relationships. Right?
So how can we help? What are you looking for? More mentors? More members?
We're doing both. We'd love to have more mentors, and I think we have about 100 mentors now, and we think there's probably room for about another 100 more in Atlanta. We'll probably taper off around 200, 250, for the size of the Atlanta market. It's very difficult to for busy people to actually come back and commit time to do it. And we kind of are in that, you know, asking sharks to give back, it's a hard thing. Right? So but it's, again, we're hoping that's the role model that from where we see it today, that's there. From a membership standpoint, I think Atlanta probably has about 1,000 mentors. So we are about 300 general members. So there's room for growth in that. So, you know, it's open to all. It's open for all industry sectors. There's no barriers. You want to be an entrepreneur, we'll figure out how to help you.
So it's not just technology.
It's not just technology.
Right. Now, you co-founded the Atlanta chapter a while ago, right?
Yeah.
Now, how has it grown in your mind? Is it the way that you envisioned it when you started?
For most part. I mean, we started this in 98, 15 years this year. We're celebrating our 15 years.
Wow.
I think we have tremendous impact. And as with growing with any entrepreneur, first, it was started by entrepreneurs. And most of you know, as entrepreneurial organizations go, you have your ups and downs. I mean, yeah, it's designed operation. You know, it's designed for small scale when you start out.
Right.
And when you start growing, you had to put in process and infrastructure, which allows you to scale and give back. Right. So about 5 years ago, we realized that we were, still too entrepreneurial to be for our own good to be successful. So that's where we come up with the structured programming with the five pillars, so right. We can channel people and have the metrics and the process and the support. Now we can now scale to add, you know, a few hundred more folks, and we have a base to do it, right? So we have done very well. I would say that we have done fairly well. And I'm always a perfectionist, so I could say, you know, we could do better. But I think we have created a tremendous impact, and I think the next 15 years we'll probably see an exponential impact versus the previous 15 years.
What a pleasure to have you come in and visit with us this morning. I'd love to have you come back maybe with some members, maybe even somebody from the youth.
Right.
Wouldn't that be a cool segment?
I absolutely love to do that. And I'll just touch on the three other pillars before we leave.
Yeah,
so it's
please.
It's holistic in how we thought through this. We also looked at a social business pillar. We look at social entrepreneurship, and we did this in partnership with Professor Mohamed Yunus, the founder of Microcredit. He's a Nobel Prize winner. And we looked at the aspect of there are a lot of charities that should be actually run like businesses, right? There are some charities that really, truly need to be charities, but there are a lot of them out with their hand out instead of having a good business model where they should be running on a low profit or a no profit model and recycling the money instead of going to donors every year, right? And there's different ways to do it. And so we have identified that area. And we emphasize and push that as well, right? And so we have a same structure programming using the best practices and everything else, teaching these folks, anyone who wants to be a social entrepreneur, who wants to do good, and there are a lot of issues, and everyone talks about microcredit in India and Bangladesh and South America and Africa. The reality is there's a lot of issues, social business ideas and issues here in our own town, in Georgia. I mean, there are areas in Georgia where you can't get access to fresh food.
Right.
I mean, there's areas in the city where we call them food deserts. There's just no access to get, like, groceries. All you have is convenience stores. You can't get fresh vegetables and within a 5 mile, a 5 block or 10 block radius. And this is where the low economic folks are. So we have seen some business plans come up, and we are helping putting matchmaking with philanthropists and other folks. But more important, teaching these folks, even though they have a good heart and they want to be social workers and they do other things, you want to teach them the entrepreneurial skills to be successful in being, to get a better ROI on their dollar that they have and impact the community, you know, in a better manner, right? So we focus on that. And the other pillar that we have is E2E. E2E is enterprises to entrepreneurs. I mean, one of the things that we found lacking in the Atlanta community was we are home to 15 of the Fortune 500 companies.
Right.
You don't see them. You know, you don't see the engagement level that you should have with entrepreneurs in both for one for matchmaking and sourcing ideas and the other for collaborating and come back and saying, hey, I have this need. What's in the entrepreneurial community that can come up? So we have, and since our mentors include senior execs from a lot of these large companies, we bring them in. In fact, one of our mentors that's coming on board is with Cisco, and people don't know it, but he runs all the merger and acquisition OEM relationships for Cisco worldwide. And he's based in Atlanta, right?
I'm sure there's some entrepreneurs who would like to know that.
Absolutely. So, I mean, but we have these caliber people as our CMs, and we have been putting this program together to foster better matchmaking. It's a win-win for everyone.
Right.
Well, right? And think about it. I mean, I tell people when they're looking for money, find a customer who's, and if they're willing to pay you, then you don't need venture money. In fact, all the venture guys will want to come in after they get there, right?
After they know you have that in your pocket, right?
So we're creating this avenue to help people be able to do that. And our last pillar, it's a council of board advisors. It was created for what we saw a lot of people who were very successful entrepreneurs who bootstrapped their business, services business typically, or a reseller business, and they grew it to 10, 20 million, and then it hit a ceiling. Because they didn't have the skills or the guidance on putting a board together. So we have found some, and so we have about 80 additional senior execs from different companies around Atlanta, in addition to our mentors, who have signed up to mentor what we call profitable companies that can scale, right? If you want to create jobs, you want to impact our community. I mean, all the things we are doing helps that, right? Everyone talks about small businesses are the drivers for job growth. When you have these profitable companies, they already have a solid base. They have customers. They're doing very well, right? If you can take them from 10 million to 100 million, and that's a skill level that is needed that we provide, and we have a program under COBA that's structured that provides formal board advisory services to this. And that's really, I mean, with these five pillars, we think we can... You know, creating 100 million wealth every 5 years or rolling every year after 5 years, we think that's very doable. And we think it'll be a lot higher than that. But the economic impact that we have with some of the high growth companies that we have in here, we believe we can create several thousand jobs going forward. So very exciting.
So where can our listeners go to learn more about TIE Atlanta?
They can go to TIE-Atlanta.org. And for TIE-Con, they can go to TIEconse.org.
Now, TIE-Con is the event that's happening this weekend?
Yeah, TIE-Con is the event that's happening this weekend. It's our annual conference. We host together with our chapters in Tampa and Carolinas. So it's called TIE-Con Southeast. By the way, the TIE-Con in Silicon Valley is one of the largest entrepreneurial conferences in the world. About 4,000 people attend every year. And we are now been taking it out in each of the, we have a TIE-Con East. There are different chapters are launching this to bring the same, similar energy and entrepreneurial. We have awards, we have knowledge, we have mentor roundtables, we have pitch sessions, matchmaking with investors. I mean, really, if you're an entrepreneur, you need to be there.
So it's not a members-only event? It's open to the public?
It's open to everyone. It's open to the public. And there's a small fee difference. But, you know, we have partnered with pretty much every entrepreneurial organization here. And if someone wants to attend and they can't afford it, you know, send us an email and we'll figure out how to get to it, right? Don Panos. I don't know. He's the founder of Chateau Elan. I'm sure everyone knows that.
Oh yeah.
But most of you, most people don't know that Don is also was the brains behind the technology that resulted in the nicotine patch, the transdermal fusion. Right. I mean, talk about like you know. Then he's gone on to do Chateau Elan and he's done wineries in different parts, and he's also got an automotive company, a racing automotive company panels. So we are going to have his latest sports car, the Delta Wing, on display on Saturday. I mean, it's just really cool. We call it the Batmobile. It does look right. Like a Batmobile.
That's perfect. Well, it really has been an absolute delight having you visit with us this morning. And we're quite sincere. I think it would be a lot of fun to have you come back with some of your membership, maybe some of this youth. You'd be up for that sometime?
Absolutely. We'd love to do that.
All right.
Thank you.
Hey, how about hanging out with us for a little bit while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely.
Next up on High Velocity Radio, we have with us from Cabbage Inc., Mr. Mark Gorlin. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you doing, Stone?
I'm doing well. Did you learn anything out of that last segment?
I always learn something from Raj.
You and Raj are no strangers, right? You guys have known each other for a while.
We have. We started a company together back in 97.
98.
He's the guy who does the correcting. You say it.
Yeah,
correct.
I say
you.
He corrects
that's
it.
The history of the relationship. There's one of those in every relationship. So Cabbage Inc.
With a K.
Tell us a little bit about this outfit. What kind of problem are you out there solving for folks?
We're solving a problem for small businesses that typically can't get capital to grow. It's not a very complicated problem. You see it on every street corner. We essentially provide working capital to small businesses, and we do it in a different way than you see for most financial institutions, where banks are just going to look at a credit score and see what you've done in the past. We look at your business performance. So we start out with online businesses like eBay, Amazon, Yahoo, and see the performance of how those businesses are really doing, because we can see it electronically. You can electronically see if the customers are happy through reviews. You can see the volume that's going through their accounts. You can see if they handle their customers well on Facebook and Twitter. You can see the packages they're shipping through UPS. So we can take somebody from landing on our site, go through the entire application process, and have cash in their account anywhere from $500 to $50,000 in 7 minutes.
Wow. So this is all electronic. There's no human interaction in this?
That's correct. It's completely automated. And that's part of the problem that the banks have. It's not their own fault. But if you go in to try to get a loan at a bank, you're going to run into lots of people, lots of paper, lots of faxes, lots of time. And you're going to wind up going through this, you know, process that's 8 weeks, and it typically winds up with a no for the small businesses out there, because it's just not economical to put out $50,000 to a small business because you don't have an automated process. We do. So we're doing that for a lot of small businesses right now. Our goal is to be able to work with all of them, whether they're online or offline, by the end of the year, and help banks work with some of their business customers that they currently just have business checking accounts with, but could help them if they had this sort of data and technology platform that we've developed.
Now, is it only for e-commerce sites?
We started out on e-commerce sites because that's where you could get the data. So you could look at and see these transactions flowing through the eBays and the Amazons out there. But as I said, by the end of the year, we are able to look at your QuickBooks data or look at your UPS data, and we'll be able to take a lot of offline businesses where they touch online and aggregate them as well. We can look at their checking accounts, their credit card processing. Every dry cleaner has a Facebook page. So to the extent that you can find and acquire these customers and see things about them online, you can underwrite them.
So you need some third-party social proof as part of your algorithm to decide if they're going to be funded or not?
Well, you need primary channels, and that typically comes down to revenue, how long you've been in business, and things like that. The third-party channels are interesting. So you look at Facebook and Twitter. We call it social climbing, and with a K, of course. And we and what we do is we look at those, not just in the way everybody says, oh, I'm going to look at this big data of Facebook and Twitter, but we see it as sort of the small business's free CRM. So they can go out there and use Facebook and Twitter to send out deals on a weekly basis or deal with customer service issues. And we think that engagement, if they're engaged in their customer service, then they're probably engaged in making sure they buy inventory at the right price or shipping things out on time or, you know, keeping their books properly. And so that was our thesis. And now that we've looked back at our customers that have added this, of Cabbage customers, folks that add Facebook or Twitter, one of the two to their account are 20% less likely to be delinquent than those who are not.
Now, in your experience, what kind of mistakes do a lot of small businesses make when they go after funding? You must see some of the same traps and mistakes over and over again.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's different ways to go about it. There's as Raj was talking about, when you first start out, you can raise money from more professional folks or friends, families, and fools. And a few tips up front on starting out is, one is to make sure that you're separating the two. A lot of people don't separate those business and personal finances as you're going up. So you kind of want to separate church and state. Also, if you're going to take money from anyone, much less a family member, you need to document it. What is it? Is it debt? Is they buying a piece of your company? Do you have a plan to pay it back in time? If you don't do that, it's going to make next Thanksgiving very uncomfortable.
Sounds like you have some scar tissue.
I'm Uncle Fred's been invited back now. It's all cool. the other thing is, one of the key mistakes, it's not really a mistake because you don't have a choice, is business and personal credit. And we talk about this a lot. A lot of people use personal credit to fund their businesses, and they have no choice. There's a company here in town. The three founders use their credit cards to fund, you know, it's a $5 million business, and a bank won't give them money, and they max out their credit cards every holiday season to buy inventory for their business. What taking out personal credit does is it artificially deflates your credit score, which makes it even harder to then go back to a typical bank and ask for cash. So by growing your business and doing it in the only way in which you can, you're actually making it harder for you to get more money at better rates later on. And it's kind of a trap you fall into.
But it's a catch-22, isn't it? I mean, no banker, nobody's going to give you money unless you have the kind of revenue and a business that's ongoing.
Absolutely. And sometimes when you do, they won't as well. But you're right. It's a huge chicken and the egg. Typically, banks will give you $10 as long as you have $10 right. already in your account.
Yeah, $15 will give you $10.
Incredibly useful. But it comes down to not being automated and not being able to do it in an economic fashion. It's not like the banks don't want to help their small businesses. It's not like they want to not make money. I mean, $30 billion came out of the government to go to small businesses, and they had to return most of it. Why? Because they didn't have a process for putting it out there.
Right.
So how do you guys go about getting new customers? What's your marketing process?
We all stand on the street and spin those little signs in a chicken outfit.
That's you guys, huh?
It's a cabbage outfit.
Exactly. No, a lot of our customers are driven either through online marketing or direct partnerships. So we're partnered up with folks like QuickBooks and UPS and eBay, and you'll see a lot of both our ads and a lot of things that we do with them to acquire customers. Because if you think about it, the high tide lifts all ships, especially in the capital area. And when we put more money, think about this. So let's say Stone has a business, and I'm looking at these Milky Ways, and he sells Milky Ways. And he can buy a batch of five Milky Ways for $1, and then he's going to go sell those Milky Ways on eBay, and he's going to sell them for $3. We make less than anybody else. When he sells those on eBay, eBay is going to take 9 to 15% of that transaction. PayPal, to transact and give Stone his money, is going to take 3 to 4% of that. And then he's got to ship those Milky Ways. So UPS is probably going to take $3 or $4 to send those Milky Ways. Somebody had to sell Stone some boxes and packing tape, and you probably want to put some peanuts in there to make sure that they don't get all crushed. So the flywheel effect of all businesses that rise in an economy by just injecting a little of capital into it is important. And small businesses are 75% of the business out there. There's 28 million of them in the U.S. So if there's any part of the economy to stoke, it'd be the small businesses. So that's how it helps.
So now when you're you go to market, I'm a small business, and now I want to take advantage of this. I go through this 7-minute process. Mm-hmm. So I have to have 7 minutes. So I'm assuming that that's not a hard part of the.
We have people that can type fast, can do it in four. You're welcome to try for the record.
Four is the personal best.
Yes.
So in 4 to 7 minutes, I get now I submit this application. Now, am I asking for X number of dollars, or you're telling me I now have a kind of a, is it a credit limit, or how is this working? Is it a loan?
It's not this? A loan. We operate under a merchant cash advance. So what you essentially do is you provide your data, and then we tell you how much you're eligible to receive, and it works like a line. And you can pull down all of it or part of it at any time. The product is 6 months, so you pay back over 6 months. If you pay back early, there's no prepayment penalties. There's no initiation sort of fees or to start the line, or it's origination rather, not initiation. This isn't. But there's none of the junk fees. You just pay for the money for the time
only,
which you
but
have it.
Can I have access to it just in case I need it? Or
absolutely.
I do it
right,
so I can submit my application, and then you can say, okay, you have access to $50,000. I don't pay any fee or anything until I start tapping that $50,000?
That is correct. You don't pay anything for when you don't use it.
Now, you mentioned several online businesses, but you mentioned serving offline as well. Is there a sweet spot for you guys? And if so, are you looking at expanding that sweet spot or identifying other industry sectors, types of businesses that you're trying to serve?
Our sweet spot is truly in small business, but it's in the data and the technology platform we've developed and in ways in which we can use that to help small businesses sort of across the board, whether they're online or offline. They all have the same issues. They need to grow their business. They need to hire employees. They need to market more. They need to buy more inventory. They need to get better deals on the inventory they're buying. So it's small businesses in general, but what you see with Cabbage is, we look like a company that's just funding small businesses, and we are. But the data and technology platform that we're building is something that we could use to help a lot of small businesses in different ways. We'll know when a business is growing to the point they might need another copier. We'll be able to essentially tell the business health. So I think what you'll see is the Cabbage funding business over time gradually becoming just a core customer of the Cabbage Data business, as well a lot of other companies as well.
Now, when you were growing this business, was the how important was creating those partnerships with the UPSs and the QuickBooks and those kind of companies for your growth?
Very important, because one, you know, the kind of data that we look at with UPS, which is funny because it's right down the street from here, you know, they do not let this sort of data out, and they're not without customer permission. Customers are allowing them to share this data with us, but they're doing it to help their customers, to give them more money, right, to grow, get more stuff, and then they consequently ship more boxes.
Their stuff, right.
But those are terribly important relationships for us, because they have all the, they know, they have millions of small businesses at UPS, millions of small businesses at QuickBooks.
So that was a multiplier for your business, like when you created those partnerships?
Absolutely. Well, UPS is an investor in every round of financing that we've had. They also previously gave us debt to put out to small businesses. So they're a huge backer of small business and trying to help them get out there. Yes.
So how, though? Because I know a lot of our listeners are thinking, wow, that'd be great. I'd love to have a partnership with QuickBooks and UPS and all these people.
You just call them?
Speak to the mechanics of it. How do you even get that going? If you don't already know Raj, and he puts it all together for you.
Well, not everybody has that advantage. He's occasionally still returns my phone
calls.
Now,
Raj, that goes to speak to one of your pillars, right, of the enterprise to the entrepreneur.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, Mark is very modest. Mark's a dear friend and one of the finest entrepreneurs in this town. And, he, you know, he was able to pick up and work his relationships and his network and be able to get into open these doors. But the most of the entrepreneurs don't have those talents. Mm-hmm. And Mark's a very humble but a very exceptional entrepreneur.
So how'd you do it, Mark?
I juggle.
Juggling.
Give us the secret.
I knew
sauce,
I should have learned to juggle.
It's interesting. There's some tips that I can give. So one, it helps to know someone in the organizations. But you take somewhere like Intuit. We didn't know anybody there. We went out there for their Entrepreneur Day, and where they saw a ton of companies. It was like a cattle call of companies. And we didn't have any special in or anything.
So this is
like
speed dating.
It's totally like speed dating. And it was kind of bad because they set you up and there were these four or six sessions that you could go into. And then people within the organization that found your company interesting could choose how many sessions that they wanted to see. So you'd fill up your date card.
Right.
And like people were like, oh, I've got to meet with three or I've got to meet with four groups. We got one. There was like one group that found us even mildly interesting, possibly entertaining there to go into. And we went in and talked with them about what we could do. But you got to focus on what you do for them. What you need someone within an organization. You need two things. You need someone who cares. So you've got to find someone who's got...
Like a champion.
You need a champion, but you also need a champion that has some juice. Who, if they care, they can actually do something about it or create some noise. And it's not always the CEO. Sometimes that's the worst place to go. Sometimes if something's being driven by marketing and they've got dollars, they're the best place to go. Sometimes business development. Sometimes technology. So you got to figure out somebody who cares. And then what seems to work pretty well, at least for us, is you need to start with what is the smallest possible thing that you two could do together, especially with a big company. I mean, UPS will take 3 years to decide on a new type of windshield wiper for their trucks, much less try to do a deal with a small company. And the comment you were making earlier about, you know, how is a big company going to choose to deal with a small company, Raj was talking about. I mean, nobody gets fired. Nobody gets fired for saying no to a company like Cabbage. So you've got to find a reason for them to say yes. And one is somebody caring, and two is finding a small project that you can work on together to start out that's easy to get to, and then moving from there. When we started allowing UPS customers to look at our data, we started with, you know, a handful of customers to see, hey, would we give people more cash just based on this data? And all the customers signed a consent form to tell us to look at it. And, you know, a lot of companies wouldn't go through the trouble of trying to do that with a company as big as that for five customers. But we did, and we gradually moved along the relationship. Find somebody that cares and find something small that you can start out with. Get people over there engaged in thinking about it each day.
Now, you have a great deal of personal experience in living through this startup phase, building a company up. What personal advice experience would you share with our listeners that might save them a little emotional pain and heartache and give them a little bit of a leg up?
I depends how salty I can be on the air. I mean, you hear this one a lot, but it's true. On the never stop, persistence is huge, and you don't need to stop trying and give up on things. There's a ton of people that are going to tell you no and tell you your baby is ugly. Of all the investors that we had that came in to invest, I mean, Cabbage has raised $56 million worth of equity financing in our lifetime. And the last $30 million was way easier than the first $200,000.
There's the lesson. The second $30 million is so much easier.
But of the people who invested in the company, the major ones, there's not a single one of them that didn't tell us no one, two, maybe three times before we went back. So it's not like going back and not listening to them. It's going back and with new information as you grow and then you start to hit some of the things that you've told them before that you're going to do. And eventually they do say yes because they do see the progress in what you're making. You can't take those no's as a bad sign. Another good thing to do if you're trying to raise money for your company, make friends with other companies that are in your space. When we were first raising money, we're in the financial services space, so out west there are companies like Outright and Expensify that had just raised Series A rounds. So since the VCs are going to collude against you, collude against them.
So you ganged up together?
Well, we got together. We had beers. We had dinners. And that was fun in and of itself. But we also found out, you know, what terms are they raising money on? Like, what kind of crap are they trying to throw into these term sheets that we want to get rid of? And what do you sort of have to settle for? And, you know, of the venture folks that we're talking to, who sucks and who doesn't? A lot of them suck. And there's some really unbelievably good people out there that have great experience and wisdom and pattern recognition that you can use. And you've got to find those that have that, and you've got to find those that work well with you and your company. There's not necessarily every pot has a lid, and every company probably has some VCs that work better for them than others.
All right. Well, let's give our listeners the coordinates so they can learn more about Cabbage and maybe tap into this world of funding if they so deserve.
Absolutely. If you want to get funding, you can come to Cabbage.com. That's KABBAGE. And you can, however you run your business, hopefully by the end of this year, there's no small business we won't be able to touch. But if you work with QuickBooks or UPS or eBay, Amazon, you take payments through PayPal or Authorize, we can look at your business and have funding in your account in 7 minutes.
7 minutes.
4 to 7 minutes.
4 to 7 minutes.
If you're
minutes.
A quick typer.
That is high-velocity funding.
If you care to come in and get Lee to fill out your application for you, it will be 4 minutes.
15 minutes. I don't know. I'm not that fast.
Well, hey, thanks so much for coming down and visiting with us, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
You going to hang with us while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely.
All right. Next up on High Velocity Radio this morning, we have with us a partner, Lee, with 151 Advisors, Mr. Steve Broomer. Welcome to the show, man.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So you passed your audition for co-host. Yeah, so you jumped right in there, Steve.
Last week I did two other radio interviews.
I'm easy breezy.
Yeah,
you know.
I'm pretty good with this.
How's this one going so far?
This is fantastic.
Head and shoulders above. Are you recording this, Kevin? That's an endorsement.
These guys are unbelievable, Kevin. You just don't. They're not going to lose their day jobs, are they?
So 151 Advisors, what kind of advice are you giving and what kind of impact is it having?
Well, we're an international strategy and consulting firm that specializes in helping and apropos getting businesses to market faster. So by spending less. So our clients are typically international clients that are trying to capture some part of the market share in North America. Our clients are publicly held companies, one in the UK that was looking for a way to get into the US without having to spend an arm and a leg to do that. We have contracts with countries like the government of Lithuania and their Enterprise Lithuania team, where we are responsible for bringing 9 technology companies into North America over an 18-month period of time. And we have clients in Czech Republic, Singapore, all with the same premise. They do not want to spend a lot of capital to get into North America. We can take care of it from soup to nuts in the idea that we can establish a business, establish a sales team, an executive team. We're an executive hit team primarily for them. So our firm has marketing, research, telesales, and executive roles. We help with funding and equity funding. We work with private equity firms as well as VCs to be able to find gems around the world, help them get funding and bringing them into the U.S.
Now, when you're working with a company in another country and they want to come to America, how do you decide where to put them in America? Because America isn't like kind of one place.
Yeah, and that's a great question because we try to evaluate what that product is. So one of the things that we do very, very well is, well, you know, we don't accept all clients too. So we're interviewing clients just as much as they're interviewing us.
So they're auditioning for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we've said no several times in the sense that we just said, listen, your product is never going to make it here in the U.S. and or you have a Me Too product and the work that it's going to take for us to capture or a very small piece of the market is not worth doing it. So we look for emerging products, services, just something disruptive that allows us to basically either capture a fair amount of existing market share or create something that's new and innovative that allows us to use all of our experience and our contacts around the North American marketplaces, whether they be in the wireless technology area or in the software, embedded software or machine-to-machine areas, and then be able to take them to market.
So what's your backstory? How did you fall into this line of work?
Well, I've been an entrepreneur. I've only had a real world job for 3 years of my entire life, and I'm only 22. And it is all about entrepreneur and trying to build a product and bringing that product and that market that service to the market. I've been in technology all my life. I've been in the wireless technology business since 1987. My connections and my past bring me to all carriers around the world, all the hardware manufacturers, the phone manufacturers, software developers, and then obviously the channels and the distribution to bring those products to market. So we have meetings with Dell this week. We have New York meetings with companies that help with from a retail perspective and bring things to market like your phones and accessories and products.
Now, do you work mainly with these international companies coming here and then selling directly to the consumer, or it could be an enterprise kind of arrangement,
actually,
either or both?
Actually, both, Lee. So we have right now one of our current clients is building a product. It's called Globo. They are a publicly held company on the London Stock Exchange. They have come out with an enterprise mobility in a box. So you'll be able to go to your local authorized retailer very shortly and be able to buy off the shelf a box that has 10 wireless mobile device licenses, 10 hosted exchange licenses, storage, all for $699 on an annual basis. So if you are a small, medium-sized business and you're wanting to get into the real world of wireless and you have a BYOD issue, which is bring your own device to the market, how everybody is doing it today, you now can get everything in a box, put it together. And it's not necessarily 7 minutes. We're going for 5.5 minutes to be able to do that from a typical office manager or an owner of a small business and being able to get up and running. That's going retail. So we're looking at all the wireless stores. We're looking at those, the standard staples, Office Max, Office Depots, Radio Shacks.
So that's a fantastic example of how technology advances have impacted or influenced product availability, things that you can bring to market. How has technology and the changes in technology impacted process, the way that you run your business and serve your clients? Because I suspect it has quite a bit. Yeah?
Absolutely. I mean, we look at technology every day in a way that says, okay, how can I bring your product to market faster, in a more cost-effective manner? With social media, we now have looked at things and saying, okay, obviously the bad reviews are killer, just like a restaurant bad review is killer. But we look at, I think as Mark said, the social media scenarios of growing a business. You know, what do they have? What are they doing? Not necessarily how many likes they have, but what's the information? So that's that part of the social media is there. And then I think, as Mark said, the VCs and the private equity firms is the way they invest in technology companies today is, you know, it's the haves and the have-nots. The small, medium-sized companies around the world that have great technology. I mean, I've been to Lithuania. I mean, who in God's name would have ever thought that there were so many great technology companies in Lithuania? I didn't until I went there. And I interviewed 26 companies to find 9 winners. And these are amazing, young, entrepreneurial guys that just need a break. They still think that the United States is paved with gold. And so that this is the last bastion of the opportunity in the world besides China. And so putting technology together to bring those companies to market can come in various ways. and we try and do we try and find something that gives them that unique flavor.
Now, how do you attack a market like Lithuania, like to find those 26? Mm-hmm. Are you like running Craigslist ads? Where are you finding these?
Wow, we haven't gone that far down the trail, Lee. Thank you. No, we work with the Enterprise Lithuania teams, or Invest Ireland teams, or Invest Singapore.
Like here in Atlanta, you're networking with the international business associations to go there to bring people here. So they're very excited to do that because that's part of what
it's a two-way street, right? So they're always looking for companies to go to those countries. Right. And then there's obviously the economic development teams that are trying to bring those companies out of their countries.
So you're spending a lot of time networking with those groups?
On a worldwide basis, on a weekly basis, too. We go and like, I'll meet with certain companies in New York this week or groups within those countries to try and pitch and tell them what we're doing. And we also partner with several other companies that are doing similar type of things. Some of them are just doing legal work, patent work, because we have patent rights and controls of those things, and some of the countries don't. And so we work with
them. Now, what about the reverse? What about the companies here that want to go to Lithuania? Are you a good resource for them as well?
Absolutely. We know the right people in those in those companies, in those countries, and we can help them get embedded in there. We still have the same cultural issues, language issues, time issues. I mean, I was on a conference call at 6 o'clock this morning, 7 o'clock this morning, 8 o'clock this morning, internationally, so you better get used to it. That's what you want to do. But you can get through all that. And, yes, we do help those kind of companies knock open doors.
So what's next for you guys? Are you just trying to keep your head above water and serve the business that
sounds like he's pretty busy?
Yeah, no kidding. Or is there some change in direction or a new little pet project or anything?
No, actually, I think that this is a great marketplace for us. The world has gotten smaller. Mm-hmm. The internet has helped, and all the web access to things. And so a day does not go by where we're not finding prospects that are coming to us that are trying to find a way to get into North America markets. And then, of course, we try and challenge our North American companies to look at ways for us to be able to help them too.
Right, to consider going international. A lot of people
are scared.
And they think logical progression is, okay, I'm here in Atlanta, let me go to Alabama, whereas maybe the logical progression is to go to another country, right? There's a business case for that
as well, isn't there? And, of course, everybody is looking to China, right? The fastest growing market in the world.
Right.
And the difficulty of trying to do that, it sounds easy, it's not. And so sometimes we say, let's go to South America first, or let's go to Central America
first. So we'll practice in a closed
country. And in a time zone that can be handled, and an easy language issue.
Right.
It doesn't have to be, overwhelming to people. Let's go from there. I mean, Africa is unbelievable. We have some contacts in Nigeria that is growing in leaps and bounds, and South Africa is growing too. So that helps a lot.
So you're open to talking to companies that haven't expanded internationally yet, and you could help them maybe make the foray into these markets?
Yeah, put together an executive summary or some kind of business strategy that allows them to say, okay, when we go see them, here's the value proposition. Mm-hmm. Here's why we believe our product will sell well there. Remember, we got to sell something, right? So a lot of times people think grandiose ideas without going, okay, what's the sales 101 approach?
And so walk us through your engagement cycle a little bit, if you would.
Obviously, we go through this little interview process where we're trying to evaluate the product itself, the market itself, what's the economics of that, and go through and saying, okay, you're on the positive side. We are always working with the founders, presidents, investors of those particular organizations because that's where the decision-making is for us. And then at that particular point, we sit there and go, okay, here's what the engagement is going to look like. We're very specific in the deliverables that we provide clients because there is an evaluation of the marketplace that has to happen before we can bless this thing. We need to look at the business strategy and putting together, is it a direct selling market? Is it a channel strategy? How does it get, what kind of where, and then start to execute on that program. Engagement times can run from 6 months to several years. We've had some great exits with international companies and domestic companies over the years. Whether you need money, whether you don't need money, how do you want to grow, those kind of areas.
All right. So what's the best way for our listeners to learn more and have a meaningful conversation with you about this?
151advisors.com.
Well, that's easy enough.
That's the number 151.
Yes, it's the number. And don't get me started on how that number came up, because that'll take another show.
Well, you know what? I'd like to have another show. I really would. I mean, you have so much to share. You have such a broad range of services. And if we can pull it off logistically, I'd love to have you
come
back.
Well, I actually live here in Sandy Springs.
Well, there you go.
But I'm on usually C2A in room 675 on normal days of the week.
But no kidding. Don't you think that would be fun, having come back with a client and talk about that transition and dealing with a cultural aspect?
Actually, or maybe one of the international chambers or one of the people you work with.
I work with the chambers. I'm on the traveling roadshow with the Nick Messinos at Gwinnett and the Metro Atlanta Chamber of Commerce and stuff too. So we can do that. And I did have one of my clients from Lithuania here in Atlanta. So they come by all the time.
Oh, well, let's put something like that together. Let's do it.
Great. Thank you.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest this morning, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the fast lane.